Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beats. I personally take Super Beats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at intelligentbeats.com. That's intelligentbeats.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to an expert on supplement testing and the regulatory environment in which we operate. Lately, the supplement industry has experienced a lot of blowback from the Attorney General of the state of New York, Eric Schneiderman, who has launched kind of a raid on the supplement industry, releasing results of a test that showed that supplements were adulterated, that a lot of supplements didn't have any significant active ingredients, basically telling consumers that they were getting gypped at the health food stores and the chain stores where they were buying herbal supplements. And Dr. Wong is a PhD in toxicology, and she's an expert in the regulatory environment. She is Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs for the Council for Responsible Nutrition, CRN. By the way, crn.org is the website. So continuing on our discussion, we pretty much in part one, if you haven't listened to it, please listen to it, because in part one, we pretty much have debunked the methodology that the Attorney General used. It's in a white paper that you can access. It's called The Capabilities and Limitations of DNA Barcoding of Botanical Dietary Supplements. Dr. Wong, so is there a place where people can access this report?
Yes, it's available on our website, and we actually have a microsite that provides information to consumers on the New York Attorney General investigation. We have a great infographic on there as well as the white paper. So the website for that is www.crnusa.org/NYAG.
Right, and there's a couple of hashtags on Twitter. One is release the report, or hashtag release the report, which has been making its rounds on Twitter. So if you're active on Twitter, please tweet at Attorney General Schneiderman, release the report, because we really want a public groundswell so that we can actually see the data which he purports to show that supplements are not valid. It's a little like poker. I think he's bluffing. I think he makes it like he's holding four aces. I think he's got a couple of deuces. That's the analogy.
And I hope that he will finally come forth and listen to consumers and what they're asking for, which is the truth.
Yeah, I think, though, that I doubt he's going to do that, because if he were to do that, it would be an embarrassment. So I think he's got to what it seems to me he's doing is he's trying to expand the scope of this to call for greater FDA regulation of supplements, align himself with other attorney generals who may be, somehow convinced that there is a problem because of the strength in numbers, and also to negotiate with some of these supplement manufacturers. GNC, who is one of the targeted manufacturers, has sort of entered into a little bit of a compromise agreement with the Attorney General. They basically said, we're not admitting any wrongdoing, but we will try harder. Is that not an accurate summary of what has happened?
Well, the important thing to emphasize is that there was no admission of wrongdoing because the products were independently retested and were shown to contain the ingredients that they were said to contain on the label.
Sounds like a face-saving measure for both GNC and the Attorney General. I mean, you really don't want to tick off the Attorney General of the state in which you're doing business. I mean, it's a bad idea. So basically, they're saying, hey, thank you very much, Mr. Attorney General, but, you know, we have some information that kind of contradicts what you're saying, and we're nicely going to send you that information. And the Attorney General says, well, what are you going to give me? And they say, well, we'll try to do even better. But we're not admitting that we aren't doing good. So it's sort of like a Pyrrhic victory for the Attorney General.
Yep. And you know what everyone should be aware of is that there are already ample regulations in place to ensure the quality and identity of dietary supplement products. And so these reputable companies are already following the law. And so any additional testing that the AG is pushing really does not provide additional assurance because the regulations already cover for that.
Right. So you're an expert in regulatory. That's a, you know, every big vitamin company has a person like you in regulatory, scientific and regulatory, which is an important area because you can't do business in this environment without coming into contact and sometimes conflict with regulatory agencies, whether it's the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, or the FDA, you know, another agent, or the, now it's the you know, attorney generals. They're all involved in some level of regulation. So they say, and often these news articles that have accompanied this story have sort of uncritically accepted Eric Schneiderman's conclusions that supplements are adulterated or, you know, worse, harmful, dangerous, worthless, and that there is absolutely no regulatory framework, that the FDA must be further empowered with new laws, more sweeping regulations, so that the public can be safeguarded. So tell us, you know, what are these regulations that it's claimed don't even exist? Are we riding bareback and unprotected?
No, you know, dietary supplements are amply regulated both by the two agencies you mentioned, the FDA and the FTC. And by law, dietary supplements must, manufacturers have to adhere to good manufacturing practices or GMPs that include meeting product specifications for identity, purity, strength, and composition of their products. And FDA conducts routine inspections of dietary supplement manufacturing facilities. There's also a review of product labeling, and there's a requirement for companies to notify the agency if they are using an ingredient that hasn't previously been used in dietary supplement. And so on the other side, FTC regulates advertising, so the claims that are made about a dietary supplement product. So there is...
Yeah, God forbid you should make a disease claim. In other words, claim, you know, that you say your supplement is going to cure cancer or heart disease. You really can't do that. They'll come after you.
That's right. And so we support the regulation of dietary supplements that is already in place, and we advocate for FDA to have more resources so that they can provide stronger and swifter enforcement of these existing regulations.
Well, it recently, what you just said is important because recently the FDA came under fire because this, you know, we referred earlier to a drug-like ingredient that had appeared in some, you know, these crazy supplements that bodybuilders and weightlifters use and sometimes kids use to get high, it was out there, they knew about it, and they had the enforcement powers under the law. But they didn't act, and it was actually only after the prodding by outside experts who said, hey, what's going on here? There's some bad stuff out there, and the FDA is sitting on its haunches. They're not doing anything about it.
Right, and FDA has the authority to act upon these types of products. They can call for a recall, whether it's voluntary or mandatory, if there is a safety concern. They could exercise other enforcement actions, including, can we start that one again? I just lost my train of thought.
Yeah, no, we're talking, did FDA, were they asleep at the switch, basically, in this regard?
So FDA has authority to act upon products like this. So this is products that contain an amphetamine-like isomer called BMPEA.
Right, that's and the latest thing that appeared on the market.
That's the latest thing that we're talking about that's been in the news. And what's happened with that is that last year, FDA itself published an article in the scientific literature showing that this substance, which some manufacturers are saying come from a particular plant, actually was not found in any of the plant samples they tested.
Right. That's the sleight of hand, is they say, well, it's plant-derived, so it's natural. But it really isn't natural. It's synthesized in a laboratory.
Right. So in this case, if it's not found in a plant already, then it would be considered a new dietary ingredient and would require notification to FDA for review of information on safety. And that hasn't been done, as far as we know.
Right. So critics of the FDA have said, and I'm going to enunciate this view, you know, you don't have to necessarily agree or not. You can weigh in as you care to, because, you know, you're maybe in a position where you want to be conservative in your assessment of the FDA's role in this. But some people have said that the FDA in some ways is sandbagging their regulation of supplements in an effort to make it appear that they need more regulations, that they need more funds, they need more people to get this done. And so it's as if, you know, they're, you know, it's like sometimes when the cops are looking for a raise in a certain municipality, they stop writing tickets. They slow down. They can't go on strike, but they just sort of slow down. Is that conceivable as a scenario, or do you not want to weigh in on that?
We don't need more regulations. There are ample regulations in place already at the federal level, but what is needed is more enforcement. So perhaps FDA does need more resources to carry out their enforcement actions.
Right. So great, because here you are, you're a supplement trade organization, the Council for Responsible Nutrition, and you say the FDA, you know, you don't need more regulations, but the FDA should regulate people who violate the rules that are in existence, and you're okay with the elimination of bad players that give the industry a bad reputation.
Exactly. We need to eliminate these fringe players that give the entire industry a bad name. And the way to do that is to have FDA enforce the rules they already have.
Okay. So let's get back to this issue of the testing of supplements, because this is an issue that I think is important for consumers. You know, one of the advantages of drugs is that drugs, you know, pretty much if you buy, a synthetic thyroid, Synthroid, 0.025 milligrams or 25 micrograms of Synthroid, you pretty much know that since it's a synthetic ingredient, it's been added to the product, that's what you're getting. But when it comes to supplements, what is the correct way to test, and how do supplement manufacturers ensure that, you know, say one batch of ginkgo biloba isn't twice as strong as another, or that it really, you know, that they're sourcing it appropriately? Maybe they're buying some materials from, you know, other countries where, you know, they're raising these herbs. How do you make sure that the consumer's getting a steady dose of the right stuff, and that from month to month, they're not, you know, they may not be getting twice the dose of St. John's wort that they got the month before?
Well, the laws that are in place require manufacturers to adhere to GMPs, or good manufacturing practices. And so this occurs both at the ingredient level as well as the finished product level. So testing is done throughout the manufacturing process to ensure that the product that is in the bottle is what is stated on the label.
Right. So the GMP inspections and regulations are sufficient to assure that. And the responsible manufacturers, I think, they don't want to be, exposed. They don't want to lose their reputations because of mistakes.
Exactly. And they are, you know, inspected and audited by the FDA on a routine basis. And some companies also will take an extra step in getting third-party certifiers to come and audit their manufacturing facilities and do independent testing on their products. And you'll see that on some dietary supplement labels, that they've been certified.
Right, and certified by the, what are some of the outside testing entities?
Some of the most common ones would be the United States Pharmacopeia, or USP.
USP, right.
Also, NSF is another third-party certifier, as well as UL. So those are all third-party companies that can help to, have companies take that extra step.
So the correct methodology is not DNA barcoding testing, but you're a scientist. So what do you do to test an extract? You do it used to be called HPLC in my day. There's another term for it. It's a gas chromatography technique that only certain labs do with expertise.
Yeah, it depends on the ingredient that you're testing. So if you're looking at a raw material perspective, you might want a trained botanist who would examine the raw material under a microscope.
See if it's the right plant, if it's the real plant. Okay.
And then after it's undergone processing, you want to look for certain chemical characteristics of the extract. So, for example, if you're looking at a ginseng extract, then the marker that you might be looking for would be ginsenosides.
Right.
And so there are a number of different chemical identification tests that are valid and widely used by industry and experts.
But it's much more complicated than Attorney General Schneiderman thinks, because he's basically a smart layperson, but he's an attorney. That's his level of expertise, not science. And so he says, well, the DNA tells all, but in this case, not.
It's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
But here's
you have to look at it case by case.
Here's a question that, I think crosses the minds of many consumers. We recently, by analogy, this is a different industry, but by analogy, we had a case of lumber liquidators. Lumber liquidators is selling, cheap, floor planking, looks great. They came in with just phenomenal cost savings to consumers, and people said, this is great. I guess there's like the Walmart of flooring, because they buy mass amounts from China, and it's great. But it turned out that they were having supply chain problems, that the Chinese, a little bit of an unreliable source, they were cutting corners, and they said, hey, you want it cheap? We can make it cheap. But when they made it cheap to give them a better price point, the stuff was adulterated with chemicals, and people, got sick, and there was outgassing of the floor planking and yada, yada. So some people say, well, I'm concerned that my supplement manufacturer gets stuff from foreign countries, namely China. China has a bad reputation these days. How can you safeguard against these kind of supply chain problems? Do you have people stationed in, these foreign countries to inspect the factories to look, or is the stuff tested when it comes to the United States? How do you make sure there's not a mistake?
Well, consumers need to do their homework and make smart choices about the products they buy. So what they need to do is look for reputable companies who have a long history in the business and a history of making quality products. So if it's some company that's just appeared out of nowhere, you might not be able to trust them. And also, if the product sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So if you're looking at things like outlandish claims to cure chronic diseases or some natural alternative to drugs, then you probably want to avoid that type of product.
And that's you have some of those guidelines on the CRN website, right, on how to be a smart consumer.
Yes, there is a tip sheet for consumers that people can use to help them make smart choices.
Right. So CRN consists of a group of companies. And did you disclose the companies that belong to CRN that are part of that, are part of your organization?
Yes, all of our members are listed on our website.
Okay.
So we represent over 100 finished product manufacturers and marketers, as well as ingredient suppliers.
So what if a company comes along and they make, Black Widow spider venom extract that enhances your sexual performance, and they say, look, we know that we can really boost our sales because people will be more confident that CRN has endorsed our product. Do you vet these companies, or could you conceivably, a company that participates with you, you're concerned about their quality control, do you ever fire a company?
Well, we do vet them, but importantly, members have to follow a code of ethical principles, and so that includes producing products according to federal regulations and adhering to responsible marketing practices. We also have a number of self-regulatory initiatives, including voluntary guidelines that our members are expected to follow.
Okay. And so you haven't had any trouble with any of your members saying, you know, like all of a sudden you discover that a member is like, eh, they're not really living up to their standards. So publicly or quietly, you say, we don't want to be associated with you anymore.
No, our members understand the responsibilities that are associated with being a responsible manufacturer and marketer of dietary supplements.
Okay, good. So any other additional points you'd like to add to the discussion? The one thing I wanted to ask you was, are you disappointed with the press coverage of this? Because I know that CRN tries to apply a corrective sometimes. The New York Times or Washington Post writes an article saying that the vast majority of supplements that people are consuming are either worthless or adulterated. Do you make your presence known, and do you try to get them to publish a letter to the editor or some sort of op-ed piece? Are you disappointed that the mainstream press has been so reluctant to carry the story?
Yeah, we are disappointed because the wrong message is getting out. And the other thing is that the focus is really on the wrong issue. The focus should not be on mainstream responsible companies, but should be on these outliers that are producing illegal products.
Indeed. And but with a few exceptions, I think it was either Salon or Slate ran a pretty good story on this. Also, surprisingly, New Yorker, which very sophisticated, wide audience, ran a story very critical of the Attorney General. So I thought it indicated some independent judgment on their part, that they weren't going like a flock of geese with some of the mainstream media on this story, trying to impugn the trustworthiness of supplements. So I thought that was good. There have been a few victories on this story. But that's one of the reasons why we, as you know, kind of micro media, but grassroots media, are trying to get the word out to our wide audience.
Yeah, and we appreciate the opportunity to share the science and the truth with your audience.
Great. So, what's our today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What resources are available to people on this story?
Well, we hope that consumers will reach out to the New York Attorney General's office. So write to him, call him, send him a tweet, and ask him to release the report, release his methodology.
Hashtag release the report.
Yes, exactly. Hashtag release the report.
Indeed. And from the standpoint of resources we already mentioned, crn-usa.org, is that correct?
There's no dash. So crnusa.org.
crnusa.org. And by the way, it's a great website for just general consumer education about supplements. And then the white paper is also available on your website, correct?
Yes. crnusa.org/NYAG.
All right. Well, it looks like congratulations on your new position as Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs. It sounds like you're going to have your hands full in the next few years, hopefully productive years, for CRN and on behalf of supplement consumers. We thank you very much for efforts on behalf of the supplements that we depend on.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. Dr. Andrea Wong. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.